Your On the Mark podcast is loading now. The On the Mark podcast is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, on Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Joe McGranahan.
Greetings and welcome on board the WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark. I am the aforementioned Mark Lawrence. Mr. Joe McGranahan.
Someone aforementioned you?
Is with us, head of FEMA, Global Tsunami Response. He's really helping.
No, I told you, I've quit that. I'm working on earthquake prevention now.
Oh, are you? He's moved on to a different emergency response. Listen, that joke stems from the fact that he actually was on the Pennsylvania Emergency Communications Committee, which is part of PEMA.
Right.
And making sure that, broadcast communications is brought up and talked about and so on. Since then, I promoted him initially to the head of PEMA and then to FEMA, but we've gone global.
No, I was just administrative chairman of that one committee.
Right.
Don't mind.
He solves tsunamis, and now we're going to try to fix
earthquakes.
Earthquakes.
Yes, we are.
All right. Well, good. Well, hopefully we'll get some groundbreaking information out of that committee in the months and years ahead. So that's Joe McGranahan, but his favorite name is?
Papa.
All right. We have a guest in the studio, so we'll introduce him in a moment. On the Mark, sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Check him out at sunburymotors.com. Our hometown pharmacy's toll-free line is open. Call us 1-800-795-9565. The toll-free line, sponsored by the Shade Mountain Pharmacy, Mount Pleasant Mills, the Norrie Pharmacy, Lewisburg Pharmacy, Bloomsburg Medicine Shop, and Trutz Pharmacy in Mifflinburg. You're welcome to email us at onthemark@wkok.com, and you can text us at 70236. We would love to hear from you. However you would like to contact us, we'll open up the phone lines in about 10 minutes after we talk to Joe Kantz, first elected as a Republican Snyder County Commissioner back in 2007, took office in 2008, been serving ever since, surviving re-election bids, and you need more of this torture.
Yeah,
okay,
that's right.
All right, well, good luck with that. That's not why we're here today to talk election. We just want an update on some things that are happening. Really, all of the counties have got to deal with election equipment to make sure that they are secure and the Russians and Chinese don't hack the systems. You got a Healthy Streams project that you're working on, so we'll get a good general update. So welcome aboard.
Sure.
Is it okay to say what's the state of the county? How are we doing? We're in the black, I hope.
We're doing well. It's taken 12 years now to get where we are. And I would say that financially we were probably a little bit better off a year or two ago. But we're holding our own. And there's been no murder trials, knock on wood. And
they're expensive.
They are expensive.
In case folks haven't.
And there's other things that get very expensive. A couple years ago when we actually had to raise taxes was mainly because of a really bad year we had with children and youth placements, which get very expensive very quickly.
Well, and I remember you had to renovate parts of the courthouse over the years, too. They just, after a time, you can't defer things forever.
Absolutely. Deferred maintenance is a problem that we faced when we first got in office back in 2008. Things have been let go for many, many years in many cases. And the one thing I'm really proud of, though, is we budgeted money each year to do one major project each year, so we didn't have to borrow money. And I would say that most of our buildings right now are in better shape than they've been in a long time. We do have a couple renovation projects that we're looking at for the future. Again, you can't let things go forever, and even though we're fixing things as they need to be fixed, there's other major items that, needs change over the years for buildings.
All right. Well, how old are your election equipment machines, the voting machines?
So our elections equipment was first purchased with the Help America Vote Act money back in 2006. So when you look at the age of the equipment that was used before this round of equipment we're using currently, that equipment was used for about, I believe, 20 to 30 years. So we're nowhere near the length of time that the prior equipment. In fact, the prior equipment that Snyder County used, and many counties across the state, is still being used today in New England states and still certified, I might add.
That
so
you replaced.
The equipment that we replaced is still being used today, yes.
Well, it works well because I can remember when I first came here, before Mark worked at the radio station, when we did election returns, waiting for Snyder County results to come in, took forever on the old paper ballots. But after you switched to the machines that you now say are used in New mm-hmm. England, you were one of the first people to have results in from the courthouse. So it's working well. I mean, I vote in Snyder County, half for 40-plus years now. I don't see anything wrong with the existing equipment.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with our equipment. Let's get down to it. I mean, the governor has said, okay, well, we want a paper ballot verified, voter verified paper ballot trail, which I actually agree with.
What does voter verified mean?
So voter verified means that when I'm the voter and I make my mark on whatever it is, let's say I'm using a face machine or I'm touching a screen, I need to be able to see a printout of that ballot that shows I'm marked for Mark Lawrence for a governor. Okay, I marked him down. I can verify that on a piece of paper when I look at that piece of paper.
Okay, so that you can see visually that how you
correct.
Like, for example, if you just handed me a punch card, or in Northumberland County's case, you get nothing. You don't
exactly.
You don't walk away with anything.
The DRE machines, you would not get a voter verified paper trail. And that is what it's all about with what the governor's asking for. And this is the one time in a long time that I've actually agreed with the governor. I've always felt, even as a young person, before I was able to vote, when Snyder County was looking at these new machines, my inclination was do not leave paper ballots. That's something that we need to have as responsible government. We need to have the ability to look at our ballot and say, yep, that's the choice I made before it goes into the machine that's going to count it.
But I see that now. I mean, I have the sheet, and I fill in the little ovals
yes.
with the names, and I can look back on them and make sure I mark the right people down. But that isn't verified. I mean,
Well, it's verified by you before
right,
you put
okay.
it in the machine, and that's what they mean by voter verified.
So you're not talking about a machine that would print out a copy of my ballot
no.
and hand it back to me.
No, that's correct.
Okay.
So, but so the new machines that we're looking at, obviously, this is a mandate that the governor's made. And what's interesting and a little bit upsetting to me is the governor has settled a lawsuit. And this is the reasoning behind his approach to mandating that counties change their machines with the Jill Stein campaign for president back, you know, in 2016. What's upsetting to me is, first of all, you're dealing with a candidate that never had a chance to win the election. I mean, just let's
but
be honest.
She called for these changes.
She had sued the state, the Commonwealth.
That's right. Okay.
And so in the process of suing the Commonwealth, the governor and her team have come to an agreement to settle by, and part of that settlement is that all Pennsylvania machines will be replaced with new machines. Now, the problem I have with that is, and I know that the legislature has a big problem with this. First of all, the governor is acting on behalf of the Commonwealth, which obviously he has to do as the executive. But no one was informed about this settlement until after the fact, until it was already signed. So, that is the main emphasis behind the governor's push for new machines across the state. Now, I've been involved, and I serve on the County Commissioners Association. I'm the co-chair of our Elections Reform Committee, so I'm very intimately involved in this issue, Mark and Joe. So I've had countless meetings as a member of this committee with the governor's staff, with the Department of State, with the Secretary of State. And I can tell you that every time we come along, there's always something else. And so what is happening is every time I go to the governor's office or the Department of State with another reason why I think we should not have to replace our machines, they come back with another reason why we should.
Well, what's the mechanism? In other words, you know and I know that a lot of things the state does, they get bids on, and then we can buy, municipalities and counties can buy off the state contract. I think it's called CoStars.
Yep.
Why don't they do the same thing with ballot voting machines?
So they actually have an RFP out there right now that is being processed for counties. Some counties have already purchased their new equipment. I believe three counties have already implemented their equipment in the last election. So the mandate is requiring counties to purchase and implement the new voting machines by the primary of 2020.
Will they be the same all across the state?
No, they will not be.
Well, then what's the point?
Well, so in order for an elections piece of equipment to be certified, it first must be certified by the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission. Then it must be certified by the Department of State in Pennsylvania. both of those departments, getting that approval and that certification takes a long period of time. So when the governor first came to the counties this past April, or actually April a year ago, and said, you need to know this is coming, there was no piece, there was one piece of equipment that was certified. However, that company was not selling that piece anymore because it was already outdated. So we've been waiting and waiting and waiting. Now, finally, the Department of State has gotten pieces of equipment certified. So I believe there are four or five currently that have been certified. Now, the good news for Snyder County, even though I really don't want to buy new equipment, it's obvious that we're going to be forced to do that. The good news, though, however, for Snyder County voters is we did a recently did a demonstration of the equipment that we are thinking that we're going to purchase, even though it's going to cost us about $250,000, which is the upsetting part, especially. But the equipment that we're going to be purchasing is very similar to what we currently use. It's just an updated version. Instead of an M100, it's an M200. So it's like, you know, Windows 9 versus Windows 10. We're just going to the next iteration of that machine. So the voting process for Snyder County voters is going to be very similar to what you're currently
but
used to.
But your current machines are approved.
As of today, they are.
And is there a move afoot to take away that certification?
We have been told that they will be decertified.
By the state?
Yes.
At the end of next year. The end of this year.
End of this year.
This is 2019.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So basically what they're doing is creating their own buying spree for counties around the state of Pennsylvania.
Absolutely. And, you know, Snyder County was progressive and ahead of the curve because the current equipment that we use, there's computers involved in the brain that counts the optical scan, counts the ballots. We actually, on our own, went out and upgraded those machines that we currently use to the tune of a few thousand dollars, which is not a lot of money, but it's a lot of money to me, and it's a lot of money to my voters. And so we did that on our own. There were only two counties in the state out of the 13 counties that use optical scans that upgraded their machines, Snyder and Adams County. We've already been ahead. We've been out there making sure that we're prepared for the future. And our vendor has told us in writing, we will maintain your machines through 2021. That's before the governor said they're going to decertify our machines. Now, if we knew that we were going to use our machines another five years, I can almost guarantee you that they would maintain them for another 5 years.
Hmm. Well, I must admit, it's a lot of fun putting that piece of paper, the ballot, into the machine. It looks like a shredder.
It does. That's true.
So, I always say, are you shredding my vote now?
And at this point, does your machine produce a paper trail? You do get a small printout or something?
You get the ticket off the bottom of your paper ballot. And it's a receipt, if you will.
Okay.
You know, and that's so when your ballot goes into the box, that is the ballot that we count. You know, at the end of the night, if there is throughout the week ahead through the process of voting, so every Friday after the Tuesday election, we have to do an audit of the ballots. So what we do is there's a certain percentage. We have to pick a single race for a single office in the county. Doesn't matter which township, but it must be a specific percentage of the votes, total votes count. And let's say that the audit requires us to count 200 ballots by hand. We will, as the elections board, we will sit around the table on Friday, and we will open that box for that specific precinct, and we will count one specific race to make sure that the printout that the machine gave us exactly matches the number of votes that we hand count. And in my 11 years, there has never been one discrepancy.
Okay.
I have 100% confidence in the machines that we use, and they cannot be hacked. The only way that someone can possibly hack our machines is if some devious elections poll worker, which doesn't exist in Snyder County, but you know, there's always a possibility. But the only way somebody could possibly manipulate the vote count is if they had the wherewithal to get into the brain of our machine. And that, first of all, there aren't too many people that are smart enough to do that. I know I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
And mess with that brain. And those things are always locked down in a secure place. Even I don't have access to them.
Right. So to instruct the brain of this device to do a miscount of, you know, to change. Okay, well, obviously that's not going to happen. All right. So, but you're in line for some expense in the years ahead to pay
Absolutely.
For these machines. Who knows precisely how much? More than $1,000 and less than
Well,
200.
We have
set a quarter of a
million. We have an estimate on these machines. We know it's going to cost about $250,000. Now, the governor, in my meetings with the governor's staff, said that we know that statewide we're looking at $150 million of elections equipment that needs to be purchased. The governor promised us as counties that he was going to ask the legislature for half of that money in his budget. Now, in the governor's budget address this year, he did ask for $75 million over the next 5 years. Here's the problem with that, and this is why, and I've done some things since then to share some ideas not only with the governor, but also everyone in the state House and Senate who sits on the Appropriations Committee, because they're the ones that have to work out how we're going to pay for this stuff. The governor's asked for $15 million over the next 5 years, each year $15 million for the next 5 years, getting to the $75 million. That's only half of what it's going to cost counties statewide. The problem with that scenario is if we were getting $75 million up front, paying for half, the counties would kick in the other half. That makes sense. The problem is, as counties are going back to the vendors and saying, we need a five-year payment plan, the problem with that idea is that the vendors are coming back saying, okay, well, we're going to charge you between 13 and 18% interest. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, if you take that and extrapolate that over 67 counties, that's $20 million the state will have to pay extra, and counties will have to pay extra. So that's why I've sent the letter to the appropriations member saying, here's my idea how we can save $20 million. Let's do a bond issue. And I'm not a big fan of bond issues. Everybody knows that.
You're not a borrower in Snyder County these days. So.
I'm not. But since the state and the governor's offering $15 million, budget that $15 million for the next 5 years, but use that as your bond payment. Give us the money up front so we don't have to waste $13 to $20 million in interest charges.
Geez, you sound like Ed Rendell over there. He's a big borrower. Are you insulted?
No,
laughed. Okay, good.
Well,
I like Fast Eddie. He was fun to be around.
Well,
he
definitely did a lot of borrowing. So, all right, well, we're going to take a quick break, but we're talking to Joe Kantz, the Snyder County Commissioner Chairman. Election equipment is our topic, but we got some other things to cover while he's here. If you have a question about the election equipment, if you have a question about Snyder County governance, feel free to give him a buzz. 1-800-795-9565. We'll put you on the radio and on our On the Mark program. 1-800-795-9565 is our hometown pharmacy's toll-free line.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Okay.
didn't you know?
No.
All right, 1-800-795-9565 is our hometown pharmacy's toll-free line. We invite you to dial that. Joe Kantz is here, Snyder County Commissioner. You got a big initiative. You really want to address stream issues, and the Chesapeake Bay Foundation wants you to be part of the solution there. So what's happening?
Well, it's another government mandate, which we all love, of course. So
especially unfunded ones.
Yeah, well, this is definitely unfunded in many ways, but fortunately there has been some funding in the last year or two, especially. So back under President Obama, the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, came up with a huge initiative to clean up the Chesapeake Bay, which I don't think any of us would argue with. Once again, the farming community, the ag community, has been burdened more than any others, and so they have had to put into practice many best management practices to clean up the bay and our streams, which is all a great thing. We all want clean water. I don't think there's anybody on either side of the aisle wants dirty water. So. But in efforts to try and get ahead of the curve here, so 2025 is the deadline currently for certain expectations to be met by the EPA and DEP in Pennsylvania. We have recently, we're working with students and a professor at Susquehanna University on that initiative. And
Who's the professor?
Kathy Straub.
Okay.
And recently, we're getting into starting to do the modeling for what do we have to do to make our streams cleaner. We know what we have to do, but how much of it do we have to do in Snyder County? And all counties are going to be faced with this and are currently working. And I would say we're a little bit ahead of the curve, even though we're not way ahead. We are ahead of a lot of counties. Recently, 2 weeks ago, I had a meeting with some folks from DEP here regionally. They were very impressed with what we've done so far, and they're very excited to see what we're working on. And, you know, I look at it this way, Mark and Joe. There are certain things that, as county leaders, we don't necessarily want to do. We don't have the money to do. But when we're being forced to do them and we know when the end date is, we better darn well start to plan how we're going to get to that goal. So I'm trying to be a little progressive in getting us to that point. And that's why the program that I'm trying to put together right now in the Snyder County Healthy Streams Initiative is 100% voluntary. It does not force anybody to do anything. However, my fear is that if we don't meet the goals by 2025, EPA and DEP will force landowners at their own expense to make these improvements. We're trying to get ahead of that so people don't have to do it at their own expense and can do it voluntarily.
Well, we know from talking to farmers, you have some farmers who are interested in assisting, and you have some that say, spend a dollar for that. I don't think so, but you know, it's not in their interest at the moment.
And a lot of that, and that's why this is important, a lot of it is education. We need to educate not just the farmers, but people in general. How many people do you live next to that have green yards, green lush yards in the summertime, and you see the Chemlong truck pull up, and you know, well, guess what? There's chemicals and there's nutrients that are being sprayed on those lawns to make them green and lush. And while I have nothing against that, I do have an issue when those nutrients are not being calculated into the models, and everything that the farmer does is being calculated into the model. So it's a little unfair to just blame it on the agricultural community when the folks that live in suburbia are not participating in those requirements as well.
It's the urban areas with the volume runoff and the rural areas with less runoff, but you know, the potential for something you don't want in there.
Well, how can that not be calculated, you know, the treatments that people get on their lawns? How can companies like Chemlon spray that stuff without accounting to the government for what they've done and what the runoff might be?
Well, and again, I don't know what their requirements are, but I know that in the modeling, we've not calculated that in there yet. And you know, let's face it, we're going to look at, I mean, look at AOC right now. We're blaming cows for greenhouse gases. Well, I hate to say it, but we all flatulate. You know, I mean, it's like, it's not just cows. I mean,
well, we got to stop that, Joe.
So, you know, I mean, you go to the highest concentration is what's going to get the most attention first. And so that's what, you know, that's why the farms are working hard.
Can you stay a little bit past 9 o'clock?
Sure.
Okay, fantastic. All right. We got a caller unrelated to that topic, but keep that trifold in your hand because we're not done. Eric, you're on the mark. Thank you so much for responding to our call for individuals to talk to Joe Kantz. You're now on the mark. Go right ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen, and hello, Joe. Eric, one of your neighbors down here in Port Treverton. The question I have is, Joe, is what can Snyder County do to try to limit what I'm seeing as proliferation of the availability of alcohol? We now have a second convenience store, which is remodeling up on the strip so they can sell beer and wine. What can Snyder County do? I mean, what happened to the old days where you had liquor licenses and there was a defined number of liquor licenses which were put out there? And also, what thoughts do you have on if marijuana is legalized, how Snyder County can take enforcement of that to make sure that that pot isn't being given to our kids? Thank
you. All right.
Thank you, Eric.
Proliferation of liquor licenses.
Do we have another hour? No, Eric, great questions. Obviously, Eric and I probably have some shared thoughts. So, you know, let's talk about the alcohol first. I mean, the state... This has always been one of my problems with some of the state laws that we created. The state has been very good at what I would consider a money grab. So let's create a law that taxes some sort of sin, and let's benefit from it. Let's balance our budgets on the backs of people doing stuff they necessarily shouldn't be doing anyhow. You know, is it wrong to have a drink? Absolutely not. I don't have a problem with that. When you drink to excess, is it a problem? Absolutely. We see it every week, unfortunately, when people are in drunk driving accidents and whatnot. You know, there's a regulation process through the legislature. I don't always agree with it. I did not agree with the medical marijuana, the way the system was set up. I'm not arguing the fact whether we should or should not allow medical marijuana. I thought that the process in having to establish yet another layer of government was the wrong way to proceed with that issue.
All right. So I keep hearing you saying state, legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Snyder County is a constituent of the legislature. You're a constituent, mm-hmm. So you just provided gracefully input, but they made the decision.
Well, and the legislature, to their credit, in the last round of, let's take gambling for a great example. I talked about this last week with some folks. In the last round of gambling expansion, townships, municipal leaders had the ability to opt out so that no mini casinos could be placed in their township. I took that issue. I made it an issue that was important. I was able to get 14 townships in Snyder County to sign on and opt out.
Eric, we're going to finish this answer you want. What's Snyder County doing to control, regulate, and monitor? And then on if recreational marijuana is legalized, what's Snyder County doing? We'll reiterate that question when we come back.
It's a little rough when you don't have a police department.
We'll let them finish. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury, 9 a.m.
News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Joe McGranahan.
All right, welcome back to the KOK Live telephone talk show, On the Mark, right in the middle of our conversation with Joe Kant, Snyder County Commissioner. He's been in office since 2008, and he is telling us about some of the very latest activities in Snyder County, the latest topics. So we're in the middle, not only in the middle of the interview, but we're in the middle of a question, so we'll get to that and we'll finish that up in a moment. On the Mark, sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. Our hometown pharmacy's toll-free line is open. Call us 1-800-795-9565. It is sponsored by the Shade Mountain Pharmacy, enjoying life out in Snyder County and Mount Pleasant Mills, the Norrie Pharmacy, Lewisburg Pharmacy, Bloomsburg Medicine Shop, and Trutz Pharmacy, which is in neighboring Union County, just across Penns Creek. Get over there and up on the next ridge and down the hill, and there's Mifflinburg. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com and text us at 70236. And Joe's answering a question that relates to what's the county doing to control the proliferation of alcohol, these small licenses that pop up at the Sheets and other places?
Sure. Well, and Eric's question is a great question. Now, unfortunately, the county doesn't have a lot of say in who gets those licenses. Obviously, that's done by the state. Of course, the townships used to have some say in the liquor licenses. As he said, that's really changed a lot over the last number of years. You know, the best thing we can do is make sure that, you know, people are following the law, and that's not always easy to do. You know, we were just talking, you know, off mic. I mean, are people consuming more alcohol because it's more readily available? And I don't know the answer to that question. That would be a very interesting statistic to see. I'm sure that the state collects that data somewhere.
Well, I hope the answer is no.
I don't know why they would, because it's just a matter of having easier access to it. You know, I mean, we were talking, do we buy less food because we buy more wine and beer? I'm not losing any weight. Of course, I don't drink a lot of alcohol either, so it's not an issue for me. You know, I don't know. I don't know if we're actually seeing people drink more alcohol because of it being more readily available. You know, and as to the marijuana issue, obviously that is all state regulated. I have differences of opinion from the way the laws were written.
The medical marijuana laws.
The medical laws, yes. I don't agree with having another layer of government to distribute that product, but that's the way it was written.
Well, think of the tax revenue. Eric, did you get a good answer there?
Well, the question I have for Joe is then, as a commissioner here in Snyder County, if the voters here in Snyder County say, we do not want medical marijuana sold in Snyder County, we do not want to have recreational marijuana sold in Snyder County. What rights do we as Snyder Countyans have to prevent that? What can we do?
So, Eric, the only answer I can give you on that is what I've done, and that's go to my state legislators, you know, our state legislators, and say, I'm not in favor of having this in Snyder County. Unfortunately, the way the laws were passed, I believe they do not have a say in where these distribution centers and growing facilities will go. Now, I will tell you that I've not been opposed to at least potentially allowing a growing facility in the county, only because of the jobs aspect that comes with that. Again, I'm not thrilled about it, but it's one of those things that it is a state law. Although I don't like it, I don't want to necessarily take those jobs away. But the distribution center I have real issues with. I've heard rumors that we may have one in the county someday. I've not seen that yet. But again, I don't think that even our state legislators have the ability to stop that from happening.
You're talking about a dispensary?
Yes, a dispensary.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for calling in, Eric. Lance, next up with Snyder County Commissioner Joe Kanz.
Okay. Well, anybody that knows me knows that I really believe that alcohol is quite a bane on humanity. But if any things that are put out by Mothers Against Driving Drunk are any indication, the proliferation of alcohol within a state does not contribute to any kind of, more problem, what I'm trying to say. In other words, more alcohol doesn't mean more drunks, because the folks that are doing it will keep doing it. And also, with firearms, you know, Snyder County, per capita, has the most number of instant background checks per capita, of course, of any county in the whole United States. I thought that was pretty amazing. And they also have about the lowest murder rate.
Well, you'd be a fool to break into just any old house around here, because you know a lot of people enjoy guns. It's, firearms and target shooting and hunting's very common. So,
when I go one step further, it's not just those things. It's protecting my family. I mean, 20% of Snyder County people have a right to carry, have a carry permit.
20%?
20%.
Holy
smokes. Wow. So, don't mess with people.
Do you have
Snyder
a carry
County.
Permit?
My wife and I both.
You do? Okay.
Absolutely.
My wife and I do, too.
Three people here packing, and I have no weapon.
Well, you should feel safe, though.
All right. Thank you so
much,
Lance.
As long as you guys are peaceful, I
Thank
do.
Thank you, Lance. Okay. Just a couple of minutes left. You're back to the water plan, the riparian buffers,
yes.
Real quick.
So just to wrap that up, if you are a landowner that has a stream, any type of waterway on your property where there's running water, maybe it's not running year-round. Maybe it only runs in high water season. But if you have any type of stream on your property and you would like to talk to someone about helping out Snyder County meet our goals for the Chesapeake Bay initiatives, we have some money available right now through a DCNR grant to plant riparian stream buffers, that's trees along your streams, 15 feet on each side of your stream can be planted. And what that does is help to filter that water. As the storm water comes down into the stream, those leaves, the leaf pack, the roots of help hold the bank together, helps the sediment from washing down into the bay. All of those things make a difference, and I'm a believer in riparian buffers. We have them on my farm. They work wonderfully. They've improved the quality of our pasture and our farm. So if you're a lander, you do not have to be a farmer. Let me emphasize that. If you are a landowner in Snyder County and you have running water, please reach out to our conservation office and get your name on our list, because we may be able to help you as early as this year.
All right. Well, this is consistent with all of your strong ideals, whether it's good government or creation care, through your strong faith or through your farming practices. You want to be a good steward. So
absolutely.
This is real consistent with what you're doing. How can people get more information on this? And you're going to do another outreach effort later.
We will.
But in the meantime.
Yes. And this is very preliminary. I mean, this is a rough draft that I brought today. So we're actually I attended a 2-day riparian buffer summit last week for 2 days. It's a once a year occurrence. People from all over the state that were there talking about nothing but riparian buffers. And
2 days.
Yeah.
2 days of riparian buffers. Wow.
They do have a coffee pot in the back, Joe.
Yeah. So were you awake at the end of it?
I was, actually. It was very interesting. And I would not have gone down there thinking that, but it was. I learned a lot. Yes, you can call our Conservation District office in Snyder County at 570-837-3000. Just tell them that you'd like to talk about riparian buffers, and we'll get your name on the list. And the other thing I'd say, too, is if you're a farmer or landowner who has implemented best management practices. Maybe you have grass strips along the edges of your fields. Maybe you've put buffers in on your own. We need to know about that as well, because everything that we record helps us get to our goals, and we know people are doing a lot of this good work without any government intervention, and we appreciate that.
Just because it's a good idea, good land use.
Absolutely.
Anything else to add? Boy, I'll tell you what, we covered a lot of amount in a short amount of time.
You know, there's always plenty to talk about, and I appreciate you letting me come in and help to let people know about what's going on in Snyder County, and feel free to give me a call.
Well, keep us posted.
All right. Yep.
Thank you, Joe.
Keep in touch. So often I run to the various meetings around here, so we'll see you around, as they say. All right. Snyder County
care.
Commissioner Joe Kantz with us today. We'll take a quick break, but first, let me tell you about the Sunbury Motor Company. Family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street, Sunbury, and Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. We invite you to find out tons more about them at sunburymotors.com. Do as I just did. Go there. Build my next truck. It's a new Ford Ranger. It added up to $41,000, so that is the going price. So between 30 and 40 is the price of the new Rangers, and I'm going to have me one. But you can do that, or you can build a brand new larger truck or smaller vehicle via Ford, Hyundai, Kia, or Lincoln. Any vehicle. Plus, they already have hundreds of vehicles, including the Rangers, on the Sunbury Motor Company lot, and they would just love to super serve you as they do everybody. SunburyMotors.com, a place where you can check out online specials, build a Ford, Hyundai, Kia, or Lincoln, or run on down to the lots on 4th Street or Routes 11 and 15. They'd love to keep super serving you as they have other folks. All right, now switching to open phones. 1-800-795-9565 is our hometown pharmacy's toll-free line.
Oh, the weather outside's been frightful. School cancellations are delightful. I want to go play in the snow. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Why is it that only kids are excited when it snows? Mom gets all crazy about going to the store for bread, milk, and eggs, and Dad runs to the hardware store for more salt. One of the quickest stops we make is our hometown pharmacy. We call ahead for our prescriptions, pick them up, and head on home to build the biggest snow fort on the block.
Discover the hometown pharmacy difference today at Lewisburg Pharmacy, North 2nd Street, Lewisburg. Shade Mountain Pharmacy, Route 35, Mount Pleasant Mills. Bloomsburg Medicine Shop, Market Street, Bloomsburg. Nori Pharmacy, Duke Street, Northumberland. Trutz Pharmacy, Walnut Street, Mifflinburg.
Can anyone tell me, what's the big deal about bread, milk, and eggs? I mean, what's everybody gonna do? Sit inside and eat French toast while watching Snowmageddon hit?
Your hometown pharmacy, making a difference every season, every day.
Welcome back to the KOK Live Telephone Talk Show. On the mark, 1-800-795-9565, our hometown pharmacy's toll-free line. We got to do brief news headlines. No word from state police on who was flown from an accident scene on Route 35 in Snyder County yesterday. A truck burst into flames after it was involved in a crash with a minivan. The truck driver not seriously hurt. The car driver flown to Geisinger. No medical condition available yet. After several deadline extensions, Pennsylvania is on track to get the federal Real ID law in compliance.
Real ID is a post-9/11 reform that requires a tamper-proof form of identification in order to board a commercial flight or enter a federal facility or military installation. Starting in March, PennDOT will begin issuing driver's licenses and photo IDs in compliance with the law. During budget hearings before the Senate Appropriations Committee, PennDOT Secretary Leslie Richards said everything is in place.
We've had a large team working on this for months. For even over a year as we were moving toward this March date. And so we have teams that have been working weekends. They'll be at those centers at 5 in the morning, trust me, you know, to make sure that everything's ready for their opening time.
Pennsylvanians have until October of next year to obtain one.
I'm David Payne, News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The United Methodist Church, America's second largest Protestant denomination, faces a likely surge in defections and acts of defiance after delegates at a crucial conference voted Tuesday to strengthen the faith's divisive bans on same-sex marriage and ordination of LGBT clergy. Emotions were high throughout the third and final day of the UMC's meeting. Some supporters of greater LGBT inclusion were in tears while others vented their anger. when midway through the session, delegates defeated a proposal that would have let regional or local church bodies decide for themselves on gay-friendly policies. Devastation was how one former Methodist pastor, Rebecca Wilson of Detroit, described her feelings. As someone who left because I'm gay, I'm waiting for the church I love to stop bringing more hate. After several more hours of debate, the conservatives' proposal, called the traditional plan, was approved by a vote of 438-384. Opponents unsuccessfully sought to weaken the plan with hostile amendments or to prolong the debate past a mandatory adjournment time set for the group. One delegate even requested an investigation into the possibility that vote buying was taking place at that conference. Finally, it won't take long for this Wyoming school to take roll call in Laramie, Wyoming, or in the rural areas near Laramie. When they give out grades or track attendance, they only need to check with the students. The Cozy Hollow School will have an enrollment of 1. The district plans to reopen the isolated school to serve a single student who's entering kindergarten this fall. The school is about 60 miles north of Laramie. At least no new construction will be involved. They already have one modular classroom in place. It's been used for about a decade. There is one other one-student school in the Laramie district. They're a few miles away, but the roads connecting them are impassable most of the winter.
So, the United Methodists, is it hate to hold on to the traditions of the church?
It's very exclusionary. Hate's a strong term, but if you're directly involved in it, you feel strongly about that, I can see how you would feel that that's
But the United Methodists haven't changed anything since they were formed. When was it, 1965 or something like that?
Right, but the world is changing.
I mean, if you knew what they believed at the time and that hasn't changed, and you didn't like it, why would you remain a United Methodist? Why insist that the church change?
A lot of people don't just quit. I know you're advocating they should just quit, but America's not made up of quitters. People who see something wrong with their government, they don't just quit and go to Canada.
Okay,
when you see something wrong in Harrisburg, you don't just quit and go to Delaware to live.
Well, people I was about fight. To ask you to expand on that because I know you're a Protestant. So what is the difference between a Methodist and a Lutheran? Is it so great that I would be uncomfortable as a Methodist going to a Lutheran church?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember all of the differences. Lutherans were super-duper big on grace. We just love grace. And, in fact, the Lutheran church—
You mean before meals?
No, God's grace
is
granted to us. And I wouldn't be able to define the Methodist Church accurately, but maybe one of our listeners can. We invite to get the listeners involved. We got Dale on the line who wants to wrap up our previous conversation about marijuana. Then we'll take a quick break, but we'll take newcomers on this conversation. This is I don't need a break. I'm sorry, I just took one.
Yeah, you just did.
I'm sorry. I'm getting disboobulated here, but
because I ask you a tough question.
No, because I took the break at quarter after with so we could get Joe off to his next meeting. That's what. Threw me off. It's a little early.
Okay.
We're ahead of schedule. All right, 1-800-795-9565 if you'd like to join Dale on the line talking about the United Methodist. Joe wants to know what the difference is between a Lutheran and a Methodist.
Well, only from the standpoint that, you know, you said I was encouraging people to be quitters. I just wondered if some other denomination is so close to what the Methodists believe that I could go there. They might be more friendly toward gays and LGBTQs. And is there a problem with doing that?
I think they're all relatively close. You know, you can flip over to Episcopal or Lutheran, I think, relatively
soon. Well, I've heard Episcopals were Catholics without the guilt.
Well, that some but Episcopals have an open-door policy to gays and lesbians. So, you know, that's they've already changed in that regard. But we'll take more comers on this. 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565. Call us right now. Dale, you want to finish up our conversation about recreational marijuana? Go right ahead. You there, buddy?
Yeah.
Sorry, wake up.
There ain't no argument between the marijuana and I don't.
All right. I think we did. I was just kidding. All right. Well, he can wake up. Call us back, Dale. We still want the comments. So, yeah, please feel free to give us a buzz back. So. All right, 1-800-795-9565. You want to talk about the
Methodist Church? I understand it, the United Methodist Church has a lot of African components, and I guess the African Methodist Episcopal Church has been around for a long time. And they were all given Bibles by missionaries years ago, and the Methodists spent a lot of time in Africa trying to convert, you know, the natives there to their religion, and had a great deal of success at doing it. And so I understand a large portion of the number of votes that came in favor of the traditional method were from the African delegations, as well as some more traditional ones here in the United States. But isn't that their right? I mean, if they choose to hold on to what the church always stood for, why should they change? In other words, what has changed? Has our attitude changed, or has God's law changed? I'm curious about how you frame a discussion like this.
Well, I agree with what you're saying. If that's how the church as a whole wishes to go, more power to them. And I'm actually glad that the vote was 438 to 384. You know, you get these razor close votes, and then you get a lot of disgruntled people who say it just didn't go the right way. That's not an overwhelming majority, but that is a majority. So that, I think, is noteworthy as it relates to the Methodists. Well, I don't, what has changed? You know, I think we reinterpret what we think our real calling is of true grace, how much we are to share this gift that we're given from God, whether we should share it with everybody. And if somehow we were able to live sin-free, then we should definitely tell the world and be in the pulpit. But everybody in the pulpit at every church brings sin when they rise up those steps with them. And if you are certain that being gay or a lesbian or, you know, some other expression of your gender or sexuality is how you are, then if somebody else feels that sinful, I don't think it's up to them. You know, I think our God is so welcoming today, and our New Testament tells us over and over to welcome and love your neighbors, and that no one is sin-free. And I think to single out a sliver of our population and say, well, now you're so sinful that you can't serve.
But they aren't banning them from the church. They're not saying that we don't want you in our faith. They're saying that we don't want you as our minister,
right.
And
well,
we don't want to perform wedding services.
But
for
that,
you.
In effect, says that the church leadership and our ministers and our pastors are sin-free and are not impacted by the same pressures and things that individuals who are gay or lesbian or transgender are. And I don't think that's true.
So what you're saying is people's attitudes or people's interpretation of the New Testament has changed?
I would say that's possible. Plus, we're so much more aware about what, for people who are gay, precisely, you know, that it isn't something they selected. You know, who was it that said, God makes no mistakes? I don't, you know, go around saying that all the time, but let's suppose you...
Well, it seems like a fair statement.
Well, okay, so then why would God make somebody who's gay? Because they are a human, they're on the earth, they're helping to participate in God's mission here. All right, 1-800-795-9565. I am the worst spokesman for the Methodists, and just as bad for Lutherans, but fortunately I do get to talk about this from time to time. All right, we have two on-topic calls, one coming in, one waiting. Louise, this will be just a quick minute on marijuana. I know you feel strongly about this, so go ahead and do that, and then we'll get back to the Methodists.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Sure.
I have just a comment here. I read a book recently, and it's a new book that's out. It's authored by Alex Berenson. He's a former New York Times reporter, and now he's a novelist. He has worked extensively in the drug industry and covered Hurricane Katrina, and he's done some stints in Iraq. So he's very knowledgeable, and he wrote a book recently. It's out. It's called Tell Your Children the Truth About Marijuana, Mental Illness, and Violence. It's an excellent book by Alex Berenson. I would urge every person in Pennsylvania, every county commissioner, everyone who's in politics at all. It, you know, there will be more jobs if recreational marijuana is legalized, because the crime rate is going to significantly increase, as it has increased in Colorado. That's my real heartfelt burden for the state, because, you know, like the Mothers for Gun legislation and everything. My goodness, the marijuana and the drug culture has been at the heart of all the major shootings. Everything, so much is in this book. It's a hard book to read. It's very hard to read because it's very brutal. But the facts are there, and it's based on decades of research and So I just wanted to get that word out. It's very informative.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. 1-800-795-9565. It was a United Methodist Conference in St. Louis, Missouri, where they voted to strengthen the faith's ban on same-sex marriage and ordination of LGBT clergy. Mike, what's your view on this? Thanks for calling in.
Well, hey, listen, I always enjoy your show. I'm a relatively new listener, and mainly I just want to listen and learn. But there's one question I want to ask you fellas as media experts and professionals. I listened to the news report about what's going on with the Methodist Church, and I heard the word divisive used to describe what is being what is taking place. And I would just want to ask you two fellas this. When was the last time there was a movement from the left that was trying to have a proposed change that the mainstream media reported it as divisive? The question is, why is it when people want to stay the same or if they want to take a conservative view, why is that called divisive all the time as opposed to when the left wants to move in their direction? It's hardly ever characterized as divisive.
Well, the media uses adjectives so that people know accurately what people are discussing and how strongly they feel about it. So that's, I think, this. I've been at Lutheran conferences where this is these kinds of topics were debated, and that's a perfectly adequate term. Why don't you like divisive would be a better question for me, or would be my question, I guess, not a better question, but a worse question, but that's my question for you.
Well, the reason I have for that is I don't want to say the majority, but I think a lot of people, they just listen to the headlines. It's like reading the paper. The people will read the headline, but they don't go down any further or maybe even past the first paragraph to get their news.
That is very true. Well, we see that all the time.
Exactly, and you get comments on that.
Yep.
But I believe that the social media, the verbal media, the news, you know, the radio, it has the same characteristic. People like me, I'm not a Methodist. My wife's not a Methodist. And very few of my friends are Methodists, so I'm not at all that interested in this particular topic. But the one thing I heard was the one side is presenting something that's divisive, and that it's not going to mold my view, but I do believe that it does mold the view of many listeners that are listening to the radio, and I believe it's done for a reason. That's really my only point, that it's something that they're discussing, what they want, the way they want to run their church, but one side in the argument is called divisive and the other is not. They're called inclusive.
I think they were calling the issue divisive. I don't. The stories I read, the issue was divisive. They weren't labeling the people on one side or the other of it as being divisive, but I guess you could. But the issue is certainly divisive.
It goes without saying.
Yeah.
I think the AP has that word, yeah. To strengthen the faith's divisive bans on same-sex marriage and ordination of because it's created a division today. All right. Thank you. Good question, though.
One of the ministers, the Reverend Alan Ewing Merrill, a pastor from Portland, Maine, pledged defiance of the traditional plan. He tweeted, "I will not participate in your bigotry, sin, and violence." Now, where in adopting the traditional mode is there bigotry, sin, and violence?
I have no idea. You'll have to ask him. You brought the clipping from Fox, so...
No, it's not from Fox. Oh. It's your clipping from the AP.
Oh, is it? Okay. Al, you're on the mark.
Oh, thank you for calling. I mean, let me call in here again.
Thank you for calling.
Anyways, in the Bible it says there's men, women, and angels. And women were made for men. And the angels are, I don't know how you would say it, non-sex. They don't really have a sex. There'd be no need for it in the after, you know, when you go to heaven. There's no need for that. And that's what the Bible says. And then I believe yesterday I was wrong a couple times, but it's funny how it works out, because I think I told you before I was Methodist and then went Catholic. But I made the mistake that I saw it going on in my church. I knew it wasn't, and there was nothing being done about the homosexuality. But I'm glad they voted it down, and I was wrong about that. And then how do you think the faith will feel when we know that the other mistake I made was abomination. But I think homosexuals probably fits into that abomination of the Lord. And how do you think the faithful feel where if they want to go worship, they want to go ahead and do that, and we're just like, do we follow the Bible and you're just helping us with the Bible, or are you making up the rules? So that's just my two cents on it.
All right, so, we got you.
So you don't think anybody who is homosexual can actually participate in any religious faith?
Oh, no. We still love them. We still bring them in. But as long as they're active in that, they're in a state of sin. I mean, they can be a homosexual and not active, and then, and you know, they're out of that state of sin. But they can still have those feelings that they think they want to be involved with another man or woman, whatever way they want to swing.
Well, you moved. You moved to the Catholic Church, and I think there was an estimate that some 20% of Catholic priests are gay.
I know. It's you can't escape it. We're in the world in the devil's domain. But, you know, at least you got to stand up for something, and the Methodists stood up for something, and the Catholics are standing up for something, and it's our faith that's on trial. That's why I'm compelled to call all the time. I mean, my faith feels like it's on trial here all the time. Now, do I listen to the Bible, or do I listen to people that say you can kill your babies?
You should listen to me. Only listen to me. And then if I'm not around, you can listen to Joe. But those are your only good sources.
I used to listen to old Roger, and he was pretty smart.
Well, that was sound advice. Yeah, no argument there. All right.
Yeah, that
thank
was
you
good
so
advice.
Much, Al. Appreciate the call. Next caller, Eric from Port Treverton, Pennsylvania. Good morning, sir. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for the time to come back in. This is a very important topic for me. I am a lifelong United Methodist. Participating in down here in Port Treverton. And first of all, I want to say from the top, I'm not speaking on behalf of my church. I'm not speaking on behalf of the United Methodism. I'm speaking as a lifelong United Methodist. I affirm with the United Methodist Church yesterday. What I want to get across to everyone listening is nothing has changed. The United Methodist Church yesterday just voted to continue to follow what has been in our discipline for, I think, something like 50 years. We are fully accepting of anyone of any type of sexuality into our church, that we love them. We want them to bring them into a closer relationship with Jesus Christ. The thing that has come up is that this whole agenda has been pushed and pushed and pushed, but it is such a small part of who we are as Christians and who we are as United Methodists. This, you know, what your sexuality is, I don't care. Come into my church. I will pray with you. I think what the issue is that people who are truly devout and seeking a closer relationship with Jesus Christ have in their own spirit a question that they know that they are not necessarily in God's will, and they are seeking to have this further defined. If you are gay, if you're straight, I don't know, come to my church and we'll help you get a close relationship with Jesus so you can help figure that out in your own spirit.
What would be the end? What would be the end game there?
The Church will continue to be welcoming of everyone, as Eric, we always have been.
Eric, what would be the end game? Let's say you bring me in. I'm a homosexual. You bring me in. You pray with me, and I attend your church, and I become a great believer, and I decide I'd like to continue to serve the church as a minister. Mm-hmm. Now I've got a problem.
Well, what I would say is we will bring you in a close relationship with Jesus Christ, and then through that relationship, your spirit will then indicate to you where you need to be. If you feel after that time that you would like to become a minister and you still feel that you are gay and that's okay with God, then I would have to say if you truly wanted to take a path to ministry, then you would have to seek that from another church, and there are other churches where you can do that. The United Methodist Church is just affirming what we have stated in our Book of Discipline 60 years ago.
Right.
That this is not according to our church teachings. But I don't want to get any impression that if you're gay, lesbian, questioning, whatever, you're not welcome. You are welcome in any United Methodist church across the United States. And we will continue to welcome you and love you and try to get you in a closer relationship with Jesus. And then after that time, it's your personal decision. We're not excluding anyone.
Well, then how would you justify Reverend Alan Ewing Merrill's statement if the traditional plan, he says he's going to vote in defiance of the traditional plan, he says, I will not participate in your bigotry, sin, and violence.
That's his personal opinion as one minister. Bigotry, violence, by all the United Methodist Church yesterday was affirmed. We have. Have we been violent? Has there been anyone who's been violence defined as an act against somebody in physical violence? This, to me, is just someone taking their own agenda, elevating above where it should be or allowed to be. The United Methodist Church, again, is loving and accepting of everyone. And this is a very small part of what we're about, a very small part of, you know, of someone's life, in the Christian life. And, you know, your sexuality is, does this come into play when we talk of it being in church? Or we're talking about loving other ones and trying to bring them in a close relationship with Christ. And then as you get that close relationship, if your spirit then tells you that this is wrong, and I think that's what the whole thing is. This small minority is trying to force it upon us to say, oh, I believe this is you help me tell me that it's right. And we refuse to do that because we believe that it is not in God's plan. However, our churches remain hospitals for sinners, not hotels for saints. We all sin and fall short of God's glory. That's in Romans.
Well, then how can you have anybody in
there? Anyone who's in my church is still a sinner and seeking to remediate that sin.
Well, how can you have anybody in the pulpit then if you've identified everybody as a sinner? How would you find anybody to be the minister?
Because what we are as sinners is we are seeking a close relationship with Jesus Christ and by the power of his holy blood, seeking redemption of our sins. We all need to continue to seek that redemption. That's why we celebrate Holy Communion. That's why I'm in daily prayer here in Port Treverton, on my knees saying, God, please forgive me for what I may have done against you. We are all sinners. The only one who was without sin was Jesus Christ.
And gays,
so every day.
Gays need not apply, though. No lesbians, please, do not apply for leadership in this church.
No, that's not stated either. Well, you're taking it too far.
Well, no, I think that's what they do say.
But we will not ordain anyone who is, because we feel that's against our teachings. And we will not also have a gay marriage. But no, we have leaders across, I mean, leaders are more than just, we have many, each church has a council and so forth.
Right, but I'm just saying you can't be a gay pastor in a Methodist church, not
that
openly gay anyway. Okay, well, that's what I'm saying.
True,
gays need
again,
not apply for church leadership.
That is a small part of what we're all about.
Well, you said that.
But again, this agenda has been put forward, and I met this church yesterday saying.
It's just a discussion, it's not an agenda. It's just one discussion. It's not an agenda.
Well, let's go to the other extent. Suppose a gay couple joined your church. Mm-hmm. They've been married in some other church, but they've now become United Methodists.
Legally
married in the state.
Okay.
So how would they be treated?
They can join our church.
Would they be treated as a married couple?
I don't think our church recognize them as married, but how many people are in churches who are living together and aren't married? Again, it's trying to put an agenda forth. It's not your status. It's your status that you're seeking a closer relationship with Jesus Christ, and we want to share that love and his message of love with everyone.
All right, we got you. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Call again.
1-800-795-9565. The doors of the Methodist Church are partially open to everyone. So anybody likes to call in and comment, give us a buzz now. 1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. That is 1-800-795-9565. You're allowed to come in. You just can't elevate to the pulpit, okay? So otherwise.
Well, and apparently if what he said is correct, if a gay married couple did go there, they would not be treated as if they were married. So if they tried to come to couples events, that would be an issue.
They should change the sign out front. Methodist Church, pretty darn welcoming, except, and then ... All right, Hometown Pharmacy's toll-free line is wide open. Call it immediately. 1-800-795-9565 is that number, and it's sponsored thanks to the brainy decision of Terry out at the Shade Mountain Pharmacy out in Snyder County on Route 35. He's very much interested in talking to you about the very latest drugs. He bones up on the drug interaction, plus he's a super smart businessman. He's a guy to go to. Tyler's out at Trutz Pharmacy. He's involved in the family ownership, and he is very interested in super serving all of his customers, and that's on Walnut Street in Mifflinburg. Actually, Tyler's the owner of the whole shebang. Terry's a good staffer among that group. Steve's at the Norrie Pharmacy. He loves auto racing, so you can engage him in that, but if you need to know the latest drug interactions or anything that involves modern pharmaceuticals, he can help you out. Jennifer's at the Bloomsburg Medicine Shop. Smartest woman everywhere she goes, and she is the person who's making sure that they are fully stocked and all of their pharmacists are informed at the Bloomsburg Medicine Shop. That's at the little shopping plaza on Market Street. Brad's at the Lewisburg Pharmacy. He is just a super go-to guy. He thinks big, too. So if you have questions that relate to drug interactions or anything else, maybe you just got a new medicine, you want to know what to expect, or maybe your pharmacy closed and you're looking for a place to go, Brad at the Lewisburg Pharmacy would love the chance to super serve you. Hometown Pharmacies, super serving your customers in the Central Susquehanna Valley. Welcome back to WKOK Live, a telephone talk show on the mark. We thank everybody for listening in today. 1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. 1-800-795-9565, not just random digits. Hometown Pharmacy toll-free line.
Yes, as you mentioned right before we went into the break.
I did. I gave you an elaborative discussion. Eric, you're on the mark. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. I just want to check in one last time. I want to refute what Joe just said, that he put words in my mouth. He said that somebody who would come to my church in the gay and lesbian would not be welcome. My final statement, anyone and everyone is welcome into any United Methodist Church, and we welcome them to come in and sit and pray with us and get to know Jesus better. Everyone is welcome.
Well, I think if you listen to the tape, you'll hear I didn't say that. I asked whether or not a gay couple married, would be welcomed into your church as a married couple, and you said no.
No, they would be welcome as a couple.
And their marriage would be recognized?
Their marriage would be recognized.
What's recognition of marriage?
Well, for example, if you have a couple's event at the church and they came.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I think you spoke differently about it.
Yeah,
or maybe
you did.
I just misheard you the previous one. All right, we're good, Eric. Thank you.
Everyone is welcome in the United Methodist Church. Come in and let us share Christ's love with you.
I don't think anybody questions that.
Right.
Unless
you want to be a pastor, in which case we got a screening
process. Now, you said that, not me. So, Eric, that wasn't me.
Well, no, this much is clear. If you want to be a pastor and you're gay, you're out. That's it. All right. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate the call. One of our listeners sends us a note. Joe
says, your talk show lately has turned more like WPGM. A number of callers use this station as a forum on religion. I am a Bible-believing, church-attending Christian, but I like the old topics and the give and take of politics and local issues. Well, this is a very local issue for people who are United Methodists, and it is a political issue that's gaining a lot of, I won't say traction, but it's gaining a lot of attention around the country as these issues come up. I'm asking, you know, what has changed? Why is it that all of a sudden people who are members of the United Methodist Church knew what they believe, knew their discipline, are trying to change what the faith has practiced, as our prior caller pointed out, for 50 years?
No, longer than that, hundreds of years. Yeah, the Methodist Church has been around for a long time. All right, 1-800-795-9565. We had vibrant Facebook discussion about this with a lot of harsh words on WKOK's Facebook
page. Harsh words for whom?
For people who are interested in modernizing the church so much that it's absolutely welcoming to everyone. Now, I know Eric says we are welcoming to everybody, but to allow gays or lesbians in the pulpit. I mean, if they're strong, faithful Christians and following Jesus as they are able to, they wouldn't be allowed to be a church leader, just like in the Catholic Church, gays and lesbians are welcome to join.
Well, what constitutes welcoming? In other words, I can welcome you into my home, but that doesn't mean I'm going to let you sleep there overnight.
Well, I think a welcoming church is one that truly embraces everybody that comes through the front door.
And allows them to do whatever they want to, regardless of what my church teaches?
Well, I don't think that that's, you know, if you identify being homosexual as a sin, I think you should, everybody, you say, okay, well, so-and-so came through the door, they are a sinner because they're homosexual. Well, they are a sinner, they are homosexual because that is truly who they are. So you're saying that some aspect of their whole being is out of compliance with your church and they're a sinner. Well, guess what? Everybody in the pews, everybody in the pulpit, everybody in the choir is a sinner.
No argument.
And is out of compliance with church law in one way or another.
But I'm saying to you, you know, I could say my church is welcoming and we don't care what you are, but if you try to rise too high in our organization, then we have a problem with you. In effect, that's what they're saying at the United Methodist Church, unless I got it wrong. They're saying, we welcome you here, whatever you are, whether you're LGBTQ, whether you're homosexual, whatever you are, you're welcome here. But if you want to grow in your faith in our church and serve your church in a higher or leadership capacity,
you want to lead the church.
Yeah, there may be a problem. Well, there probably would be a problem.
There is a problem.
And if I choose, I'm a member of that church and I fall in love with somebody, I am gay, and I fall in love with a member of my same sex and I want you to marry me, my church now will not perform that ceremony. You know, but I chose that church knowing what they believed.
Right. Well, and so, I think that's a good. I see what you're saying. So, who would join a church? Well, I think what is driving this are people who are lifelong Methodists, who are gay or lesbian, or who are advocating for them, who are allies for them, or who love them so much that they think they should be able to get married or they should be able to lead the church. That's who's pushing this. It isn't brand new members of the Methodist Church who say, "Hey, you guys are behind the times. I joined to modernize you." Now, these are folks like Eric who they are Methodists. You know, just like I am a Lutheran. Well, it isn't something that I, you know, it's not like joining the Elks or something where you just sign up. You know, it's part
right.
of your being. So.
Well, I mean, look at the Catholic Church, which I'm a member of, so full disclosure, in case nobody knew that. But, I mean, we don't allow women to be ordained as priests. We love them. We welcome them into the church. But if they try to become a priest, we tell them, forget it.
But not for because they're sinful.
But because they're women. In other words, that's a condition over which they have no control, just as gays have no control over what they are.
So you're saying that's the
I'm saying, what, you know, so why would a woman choose to be Catholic if she wanted to rise up
but your church
to become a member of the clergy?
Your church doesn't say that being a woman is sinful, whereas the Methodists and many churches and many conservative Christians and many denominations say that being gay or expressing that gayness in any
But what difference does it make if I deny you something you want? What difference does it make why my denial has taken place? Whether I believe you're a sinner or whether I just think you're a woman and you don't fit. What's the difference?
I don't know the difference.
The net result is the same. I have prevented you on the basis of something you are and over which you have theoretically no control from doing what you want to do.
Well, if it were up to me, the Catholic Church would welcome women as priests. You certainly can't do
any worse. No, I agree with you. Right. I think they ought to start tomorrow.
All right. And all denominations have sexual abuse within their ranks, tragically speaking. I don't want to pick on Joe's faith just because they've owned up to it now.
They didn't have much choice.
Paul, go right ahead, and then you got 1 minute, and then I got to take our last break.
Okay. Christ said, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone." So does that mean that Christ was Methodist?
No, absolutely not. Christ was a... the first pre-Pauline Christian.
He was
a
Catholic, right?
Oh. All right, good question. I don't know, Paul. I don't know. Maybe some of our Methodists can answer that. I appreciate that. All right, now we got to take the last break, and then we'll be right back. We'd love a concluding call. It has to come through on the toll-free line, 1-800-795-9565.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Well, we have two emails pending on our subject. One says, if you're gay, just join the Episcopal Church and leave everyone else alone. Simple enough, even Marktopians could understand it.
I think you will see a lot of people leave the Episcopal Church.
And then another one says,
the Methodist Church.
Another one says, what bugs me about the Catholic Church is that I cannot participate in communion because I'm a Lutheran. In our Lutheran Church, I not only serve but partake in communion every Sunday. I do not understand why I cannot participate if I attend the local Catholic Church.
And as an authorized lay worship leader, I can preside over the communion with the permission letter from the bishop.
Oh, okay. Good for you.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. Thanks for listening to On the Mark. We'll pick up where we left off tomorrow morning on OTM. This is WKOK Sunbury.